What's going on? This is King Cam from June Bay's podcast. From June Bay Needs Messages. And today's message is the Forgotten Queen of Ethiopia, Empress Zuditu. Now, some of you guys may be very familiar and knowledgeable about the history of Ethiopia and the dynasties and different kings and queens that reigned there. This is new to me. But before we get into that, once again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And let's lay the foundation, right? In the ancient world, the country of Ethiopia has been one of its mainstays. Since day one, Ethiopia has always been the power, right? The Bible calls it the land of Kush. Ethiopia is the oldest independent country in Africa. No country has had that long-lasting rulership. Is also the second oldest Christian nation in the world after Armenia. The country of Ethiopia is one of the longest lasting systems of kingdoms and monarchies in the known world. Predecessor, Emperor Haile Selassie, Empress Zuditu was born April 29, 1876. She was the early symbol of women's independence, whose end is shrouded in mystery. We're going to summarize a little bit of the ascending of major kingdoms of Ethiopia, its monarchs, vision of the country, as well as summarize the life of our empress. Ethiopia is the world's 27th largest country, a little larger than the state of Texas. It is situated in the Horn of Africa, south of Egypt and west of Somalia. But let me pause right there to let you guys know that Ethiopia was not always this size. The Nile River, however long the Nile River flowed, that's where Ethiopia was. And so it wasn't until the Berlin Conference when they shattered our African nations and people and made them into these smaller states, mainly to maintain control. Now, the neighboring countries of Kenya, Eritrea, Somalia, and Sudan surround Ethiopia. Now, according to CIA.gov, the geographical coordinates is 800 north by 1,800 east. Ethiopia has many contrasts with this estimated 471,000 square miles, which all consist of mountains, rivers, and deserts, all in one place. So this consists of land, water, even though Ethiopia is at the bottom of the Blue Nile and is 7,444 kilometers of water, it's still landlocked country, which means it has no coastline by a major body of an ocean. Now, the religions, the modern religions of Ethiopia are Christianity, Islam. There are other traditional East African beliefs, indigenous to the people. Of course, historically, a lot of Ethiopians, long before Christianity, they followed the deity Ra. So this deity was not just isolated to Egypt. It was an Ethiopian concept. Matter of fact, it was a Batwa. It was a Congolese concept. But we'll talk about that another day. And Christianity is the most popular religion. That of 61%, which denomination is the Catholic Church. However, its climb into prominence was not an easy one. In the early 4th century, during the reign of the Roman Empire, Christianity had become the established religion of the Eastern world. Since trade was the medium, was the main way they were able to communicate, make things happen. This trade was the medium. It dominated the Red Sea, and it spread. And it spread to other areas by way of the Axum Kingdom. It was automatic. So according to Kevin Shillington in his book, History of Africa, the aggressive external expansion of Christianity came through the Zagwe dynasty during the 1150 AD. Zagwe kings commanded a large army and Christian settlement and control. They pushed further south, Lake Tana, okay, and new conquests were supported by the presence of missionaries. This gave way This gave way to constant communication between the Church of Ethiopia and the Holy Land of Jerusalem. And after being in fellowship with the Egyptian Coptic Church, the Ethiopians would soon evolve to make their own religious system with its own individual characteristics. Now, the Ethiopian people saw themselves as the outpost of Christianity, chosen people, direct descendants of ancient Israel. The ritualistic belief stems from the Old Testament. According to Shillington, around 1270 AD, a new line of kings emerged called the Solomonid dynasty. They justified their ascendance of power by claiming that they were the direct descendants of King Solomon and Queen of Sheba, their son, through their son. They both gave they had a son named Menelik first. Now, of course, Dr. Ben would debate this concept as far as how would Queen of Sheba, who her name was Makeda, Queen of Sheba, would go from a powerful nation, from a nation that didn't want anything and didn't need anything, to go and visit Solomon. Okay? You know, that's debatable. But as the story goes, they had a son named Menelik I. It's also believed that Menelik received the Ark of the Covenant. The Ethiopian Orthodox Church in Exum believes that according to the book of Kebra Nagast, or the book of the Glory of Kings, the Ark is located in the chapel, and the tablet is at the church called Our Lady of Mount of Zion. Now, three major kingdoms developed or evolved out of Ethiopia. Okay? They were the Axum, the Zagwe, and the Solomonic dynasty. These three major dynasties. The Axum dynasty, according to scholars, was an important trading nation in the northeastern part of Africa. And in its prime, the kingdom of Axum controlled northern Ethiopia, Eritrea, northern Sudan, southern Egypt, Yemen, Somalia, and even Saudi Arabia. By the third century, Axum began to mint its own currency. We had our own money. So between the years 325 AD to 328, the nation was converted to Christianity under the rulership of King Zion. After the sixth century, the kingdom began to decline, and it finally was succumbed by invasions of the Jewish queen Kadit in the 9th or 10th century, resulting in the rise of the Zagwe dynasty. Now, the Zagwe dynasty dominated Ethiopia from the end of the Axum Empire to 1270, when Kunu Amlet was killed during the battle. It is believed that the word Zagwe comes from the Agal people, meaning of Agal. Z means of Ge'ez. So once again, the word Zagwe comes from the Agal people, meaning of Agal. Z means of. Okay? So the dynasty came from the Christian princely family of the Agal people. The founder was Marutakla Hayamanat, the son-in-law of the last king of the Axum, Dil Naad. Additionally, the number of kings belonging to this dynasty is unknown. It's possible that the number of kings is about 16, and the total years of their reign spans from 133 to 333 years. Still debatable, right? The king that was the most known was Gabriel Lalibela, who was responsible for the rock-hewn churches of Lalibela. I'm sorry. Despite of such accomplishment, the last king of the Zagwe dynasty is unknown. Most scholars believe that the king was Yetbarak. Now, so we have the Axum dynasty. We have the Zagwe dynasty. Now we have the famous Solomon dynasty. It is the most known in the traditional house of the royalty in Ethiopia. The motto of the dynasty was the scripture from the Book of Psalms, Ethiopia, Tabish, and Dweha, Hebi, is exhibit, which meant Ethiopia stretched her hands unto the Lord, claiming to the descendants of King Solomon and Queen of Sheba, who is said to have given birth to Menelik I. Then when Amalek overthrew the last king of Zagreb, he then claimed the direct male descending line from the ancient Aksumite kingdom, which the Zagreb overthrew. Now, I would tell my students that 80%, whether I would say not 80, that's real high, the majority of the African nations and kingdoms were matrilineal, not patrilineal. Patrilineal. Matrilineal means your royalty, your royal line came through your mother and not the father. In this case, Ethiopia, the royalty or the bloodline came through what? The father, right? So the empire, so Amalek overthrew the last king, and he claimed direct male descending line from Aksumite kingdom, which was overthrown. The empire itself expanded and contracted over the centuries. In its height, it controlled parts of Sudan, Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, and Kenya. Menelik II and Haile Selassie established the southern regions in the last two centuries. Now, famous Emperor Haile Selassie adopted the imperial coat of arms, which is an imperial throne flanked by two angels, one holding a sword and a pair of scales, the other holding the imperial scepter. According to some sources, the throne is often shown with a Christian cross, Star of David, and the crescent moon. This alludes to Ethiopian connection to the three worlds' major religions that are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And religiously speaking, Ethiopia has played a major role in all three at one point in time or another. Now, the coat of arms is on a red mantle, an imperial crown, and is before the line of the tribe of Judah. Now, the line of the tribe of Judah itself is the center of the tricolor flag during the rule of Haile Selassie. Hence the phrase, conquering lion of the tribe of Judah, was on the arms, okay, which always went before the title of the emperor himself. And you see that not just in modern times, but in ancient times, they would be our ancestors, the pharaohs, and many others would put their title, put a handle for their name, okay? So it could be Son of the Sun, or it could be Kandik, or whatever. It'll be that the title, then their name. So that's why I tell my students names are very important, okay? It's good to know the name, but know their full name. Now, Emperor Theodoros, or Theodore II, he lived between 1818 and 1868, reigned for 13 years. His birth name was Kasa Hale Jigoris, but was regularly called Kasa Helu, which means in Ge'ez, restitution, or and his power. He established Ethiopia as a modern African power. He expanded the military force into a national army, and he gained central control over Ethiopia. According to Shillington, he expanded his own military force into a national army, drilled, disciplined, salaried, trained in the use of modern weaponry. It's okay to have knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and to have cities and money, but it's another thing to have a standing military. It's okay to write books and petition and appeal, but if the people do not have the muscle to substantiate their claims, we're just talking, right? Now, during 1855 to 1861, local rebellions rattled the country because the nobility tried to assert their independence from the centralized government control. Once again, division amongst the ranks, right? The nobility hostility was turned towards the emperor when he tried to suppress them. Without the aid of the church's attempts of suppressing, the revolts were futile. Okay, in 1868, Teodoros, or Theodore, arrested a British consul, which led to a huge march of 30,000 men to rescue the consul. Because the British people wanted to meddle into the affairs of Ethiopia, which, you know, they should not have been there. The guy was arrested, Then the British find out, here comes this army. Only with the manpower of 4,000 people, the emperor was overwhelmed and he committed suicide on the mountain. What if Sudan got involved? What if Kenya got involved? I think the odds would have been in our favor. Unity is important, y'all. Emperor Melanet II, 1844 to 1913, ascended to the throne in 1889 after the death of Johannes IV. He led a large army, which used modern weapons. For many years, Melanet has been in position himself in the region of the Southern Empire. In the north, he was confronted by imperial ambitions of Italy and was forced to recognize the Italian coastal colony of Istria between 1887 and 1890. At the Battle of Adowa in 1896, he was able to defend the country from foreign rule. He would later establish the capital of Addis Ababa. Now, our empress, Zeldita, was baptized as Askala Miriam. She was born in 1876. The Empress Zeldita was the first lady to be recognized as ruler in Africa on the international level. She was the eldest daughter of Melanet II, Lady and Lady Abeka. Even though the Emperor Melanet had three children, Zeldita, Asafo Wilson, and Shewa Raga, Zeldita remained the closest to the royal family. She was the last direct descendant of the Solomonic dynasty. At her coronation, February 11, 1917, first in Ethiopian history, European officials attended the event. Now, mind you, Africa has had powerful rulers for centuries. This is the first time they want to show up? I don't know. This is 1917. This is during World War I. They may be trying to play nice. I don't know. Right? At her coronation, they did come. Zeldita was summoned to the capital. And on September 27, 1916, the Council of State and the Ethiopian Orthodox Church officially deposed Aesu in favor of Zeldita. Her official title is Negesti Neges, Queen of Kings, a modification of the traditional title Negus Neges, King of Kings. It's interesting. Queen of Kings. Very, very similar to the pharaonic title of the queens in Egypt, the Lady of the North and South. According to Marcus, Zeldita pledged to rule justly and fairly. Now, the aristocracy was supportive of her reign, but her relatives were not amused. Zeldita's stepmother and aunt, her husband, Empress Tetu, was still alive and lived in the capital. She was upset. She got the crown, they didn't. The last will and testament Emperor Melanet II was that Lige Ayishu would succeed him. However, the empress would oftentimes suffer guilt by taking the throne from him, in result of which would spawn a war against Ayishu. It's a division among even our rulers. With the help of his father, noble Negus Mikael Awelo, a powerful leader of the North, they would team up in order to overthrow Zeldita. So these guys came together to overthrow a woman. However, they both failed, and Gusa Araya, her husband, captured Ayesha. He pleaded to the court that he would be imprisoned in the family estate and would still eat raw food. He said, look, I'm wrong, but hey, can y'all, do me a favor, not put me in the prison with regular folk. Put me on house arrest. And to the end of their life, she still would refer him to him as royalty. He still respected him. However, she then met opposition from Rastafari, and then that's when she gave up hope. Moreover, her reign was under constant threat because of her gender. It had nothing to do with her titles, her gender. She was not able to rule completely and freely an attempt to limit her influence, the aristocracy arranged Empress a nephew to and husband, Ross Gossard, to be appointed to remote governorship, removing him from court. So they used people in her camp to curb her authority. Her eventual separation from her husband as well as family disputes make her reign an unhappy one. Cousin Rastafari would soon be the one in control. At the end of her career, she spent most of her time in prayer, fasting, as well as other religious activities, and would soon withdraw herself from political affairs. This, in turn, would give Rastafari more leeway to the monarchy. In the 1930s, LD2 bestowed the title Negus Tafari Mekene, even though Tafari did not have complete rule over Ethiopia, he still sustained much power. Later, Zaditu's husband would lead a rebellion against Tafari in Beghmendur, but he would be killed in battle on March 31st, 1930. On April 1930, 2 days later, he died. Modern autopsy states that she died of diabetes and was seriously ill. Popular belief is that she died of shock when she found that her husband died in battle, died of a broken heart. This is unlikely she would not have known of the outcome yet. With the untimely death of her husband and rise of Rastafari, speculators believe that there was a conspiracy concerning her death. She was the last monarch to receive a state burial rites at the end of her death, and also the last. Now, we know later on, Rastafari, he would eventually get those burial rites. Now, the Empress lived a life, not a fairy tale, ironically. It sounded more like a life of a lady who lives next door, which had a hard life. She had the title, she had everything, but she didn't have the support. She had the ancestors, she had the lineage, but she didn't have support. The predecessor to Haile Selassie, Empress Adetu, born in April 29, 1876, was the early symbol of women's independence, whose end is shrouded in mystery. And so we have to pay attention to these things. We have to support each other, especially our Black women. Okay? We got to put all petty differences and ideologies aside and rise up and do what's best for our community and our family. And we know she broke a lot of ground, but she was still the forgotten queen of Ethiopia. So, this is King Cam's and Jumbe's podcast and Jumbe Lee's message. And today's message is the forgotten queen of Ethiopia, Empress Zedita. This was written, I wrote this in college years ago. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please like, comment, share, or even follow. If you'd like to sponsor the show, feel free to email me at kingcam@nsfatherhood.org. And if you want to further this discussion, feel free. Let's make it happen. All right? You guys have a good one.